Hello everyone and welcome back to another episode of the Dugout Debate Podcast. This week, after much consideration, we've selected our respective Premier League 11 of the 2010s, taking into account performances only in the last decade. We fight, we haggle, and we debate over the players who will receive their greatest accolade ever, the place in the Dugout Debate Team of the Teenies. Right, who are we starting with? Logically, at the back, it's in goal. And Will, why don't you kick us off?
Okay, well, I think it's only really between two players for me. And if we're being honest, it's only between David De Gea and himself. I do believe David De Gea has been the best goalkeeper in the Premier League in the past decade. He's probably been, at his peak, the best goalkeeper in the world. Just a couple of stats here: 109 clean sheets in 306 appearances for Manchester United. So, a clean sheet every three games. Only 13 errors leading to goals. And most, to be fair, most of those have come in the last 18 months. But I think if you're going all round consistency, a player who has kind of kept Manchester United in the conversation for the top six almost by himself for the last 10 years, it's got to be David De Gea over everyone else.
I get what you're saying. I don't agree with it at all.
Go on, Jack, tell us what you think.
For me, I get what you're saying. He's an unbelievable goalkeeper, but I think I may be partly biased on this, but the best goalkeeper of the last 10 years has been Petr Cech. And I know he's been playing before that as well, but David De Gea has only won one Golden Glove in his career, or in the Premier League, since he's been in the Premier League, which isn't obviously great. But he has been playing at Man United and they've got lots of money. But Petr Cech has done it at two different teams. He's got the most clean sheets in Premier League history. For crying out loud, he got the Golden Glove whilst he was at Arsenal and they can't keep clean sheets. Like, have you seen what's happening now? And personally, the other person in the conversation, I'm not a big fan of him, is Joe Hart. The start of the decade, he was unbelievable for Man City. He, again, has won four Golden Gloves as well. So he's been a top performer for a long time. I know now we can see him. He's obviously, I think he's without a club now since being released or being going to be released by Burnley. But at the start of the decade, he was a very, very solid goalkeeper with obviously a very solid defence in front of him.
Well, Joe Hart essentially started declining in 2012 and his career was over in 2016. Like, basically two performances against Italy and Iceland ruined his career. Like, he was a brilliant goalkeeper, but he had nowhere near the sustaining power to get even close to this list. So frankly, even mentioning him is a joke, Jack.
You only have to look at the fact that he cut by Burnley and he can't get a starting position above Nick Pope, who I admit is having a phenomenal 2 years.
Nick Pope, who could arguably be England's number one keeper.
Equally, Burnley as a team are set up to force long shots down the middle of the goal, which the keeper then saves. So the keeper will always look better in a Burnley team than he would in, like, I don't know, a Palace team or a Watford team. And yet Joe Hart still looks shite.
Okay, I get what you're saying, but then you could say that with any top team, because surely they'd be better defensively, so you're only going to get pop shots out the keeper anyway.
Not if you're Man City this season.
No, okay, but David De Gea for the last few years. Well, maybe not the recent years, but the years before.
Valid. But equally, Burnley do have 8 players in front of the ball rather than just the customary 2 that the rest of the teams tend to leave.
I would like to argue, I'm not arguing Joe Hart, I am arguing Petr Cech.
Yes, I know. I'm just glossing over the fact that you've made a reasonably good shout and I can't really come up with a valid reason to...
I can get on board with Petr Cech. The only caveat in my mind is I think that his best performances came before the start of the decade. So we're looking at early Chelsea years into 2010s, and if you look at Chelsea, they've always had a rock solid defence. By and large, they've always been in the top 4 for clean sheets, for goals conceded. And when you have a real top class defence in front of you, I mean, you only have to look at John Terry, who would be a shout for defender of the decade in front of Petr Cech to have a look at that, for that kind of makes sense. For my personal view, I would go for David De Gea just because the quality of outlandish saves year on year, game on game, month to month, I think sort of pushes him ahead of Petacek, even though, as I concede, that he hasn't won as much as Petacek, he hasn't won as many Golden Gloves. But if you were to take Petacek out of peak Chelsea, then peak Chelsea might look fine. If you were to take David De Gea out of Manchester United for the past 10 years, Manchester United would have probably finished ninth every single year.
Okay, so before you rebut, Jack, Chris, do you have either of those keepers on your team? I'm assuming you don't.
I have Petacek in my team.
You have Cech?
Yeah.
Okay.
But I did, for a long time, look at David De Gea. So I went for Cech because he had 107 clean sheets in the past decade, which was the most, over De Gea. But I would like to throw in a rogue one that's not been mentioned yet, and you're going to shoot me down, but I think he deserves a mention.
Oh, God.
Ben Foster played 306 games in the past decade, which was the third most of any player, outfielder in goal. Made the most saves of any keeper in the past decade with 996, and still managed to keep the sixth most clean sheets despite playing for Birmingham, West Brom and Watford.
That's ridiculous. That is hilarious.
Equally, that stat is just inflated by the fact he played so many times. I'd like to see the clean sheet percentage. I think Ben Foster is a very reasonable but not team of the decade shout. Very good, commend him. Yeah, I think he was unfair.
He's the Brad Friedel of this decade.
Tim, would you put him in front of Joe Hart?
Ben Foster in front of Joe Hart? Yeah, I genuinely think I would have given Ben Foster more time in an England shirt than he got. I think he was...
I agree with that.
I do think as a solid keeper, he was probably better than Joe Hart for longer.
Yeah.
And Joe Still Hart, is. Once you found out that Joe Hart couldn't dive left, that was his career completely over.
Yeah. As a shot stopper, you're going to trust Ben Foster over Joe Hart in your goal.
But equally, I do think that the issue with Ben Foster is, and I think he's said this, he doesn't love the game of football.
No.
He does it as a job. And I think if he did, he would be a better player. I know this is just conjecture and never going to prove it, which is why it's a very good take, because no one can ever disprove it. I think if he had the passion that Joe Hart had, because clearly he loved the game and he was all about winning at all costs and all that kind of stuff, and that's what made him great for that little bit. I think if Ben Foster had that, he would have been one of England's and the Premier League's greats. I'm fully aware that my guy is not going to get into the team, but I'm still going to put him anyway, because I think
Hugo Lloris.
It is. In my Spurs 11, I do concede that he never won a Golden Glove. He never won a league. He didn't even win the bloody Carabao Cup or anything like that. So granted, silverware, not exactly there. So that's the end of that argument.
That's not his problem.
I think Hugo Lloris is a difficult one. It's quite an interesting shout, because
shall I just make my case for my team, and then you can jump on the bandwagon to give me a hand. So Lloris, when he came, was this weird nutter who basically spent all his time outside his box and was heading balls to players on the opposition side and conceding. You're like, what the hell have we signed here? And Brad Friedel was the guy who was taking over, Mr. Solid, dependent, reliable. And then Lloris comes and goes. And at the time I thought, oh, great, he was really good on Football Manager, so I bet he's going to be outrageous. Hmm. And for when he did take over from Brad Friedel, he was quite shaky. And I'm sure it was partly down to that horrible kit he had that season. But he essentially became the archetype for sweeper keeper in the Premier League and transformed the goalkeeping position into what it is now, with Alisson and Ederson and all these guys. And I think that sort of evolutionary move in terms of moving from a keeper who saves shots to moving one that can progress the ball, even though now in relative terms he's actually quite limited in terms of what he does, but progressing the ball and being aggressive sweeper completely changed Tottenham as a team and allowed them to be the second best team for 3 years.
I mean, I agree with what you're saying in that respect, and obviously I'm not a Spurs fan, but you also can make an argument he's a World Cup winner now.
Yeah, that was my next point, but
he obviously is a very solid keeper.
Will can definitely do a better job of defending Lloris, so please go for it.
Well, I don't know. I don't know about that. You've watched Hugo Lloris year in, year out. I think that he probably suffered more in terms of injuries than any other goalkeeper that we've got on the list. Which to be a World Cup, a world class goalkeeper, you should be hitting 38 Premier League games per season realistically. That kind of consistency. So I reckon quite similar to maybe Petr Cech when he had that wobble with the head injury. The injuries do play a bit of a part in sort of perhaps knocking your confidence, perhaps thinking twice about going into those kind of 50-50 situations. So I do think that has hurt him a little bit. But
okay.
I would agree that Hugo Lloris does deserve a shout just because Champions League final, not to be sniffed at, better than David De Gea for sure. And I completely agree with Tim. It's just
before you say the injury thing again, Will, I'll just save your blushes. Apart from his first season where he made 27 appearances because Brad Fiedel was in goal for like the first half of the season, he then went on to make 37, 35, 37, 34, 36, 33, and then this season he's only made 14. So basically every season he's had most of the minutes in goal for Spurs.
Right.
we won't edit that out.
That's a big error by me.
So okay, fine. I'll concede. Are we agreed that Cech's in then?
No.
Yeah.
Yes. Obviously, yes.
I'm agreeing. Chris is agreeing. Jack's agreeing. Sorry, Will. It is Cech. De Gea was my second choice.
Yeah, my second choice.
And he was my realistic option, but I think it's just going to Cech. I'm not sure I even agree with that, but
yeah. Before we go on to any others, I looked at it purely as in the Premier League, these guys did this rather than they went and won a World Cup separately or they did this in the Champions League. So it depends on what criteria we're going to go on.
It might
skew it if you look at Champions League performances or World Cup.
It is, but like, it's an interesting aside.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But that is the remit of this solely Premier League anyway. Right back, who do I just go for? Jack.
Maybe out of left field now for you. See him playing now, but I went Cesar Azpilicueta. He varies between right back and centre back for Chelsea, depending on what they need. But for me, he's been such a rock for Chelsea for a long time. I can't even remember when he made his debut. I think it was in 2012.
Yeah.
So he's been there eight years now. He's won two Premier Leagues, one FA Cup, one League Cup, and two Europa Leagues with Chelsea during that team. And obviously, Europa League is not to do with Premier League, but he's a leader. He is Mr. Dependable. He can play in two different positions, and I think there's a few others you can argue, but for me, he was number one choice.
Yeah, I went Azpilicueta as well.
I have to say, I found fullbacks difficult. On this list. It was the position of least quality, which is quite surprising given how important they are now. But so you went for Azpi as well, did you, Chris?
I did. He had the fourth most tackles in the past decade and the seventh most passes of any player. I out of the people I looked at, I looked at Trent Alexander-Arnold, obviously, but he's not played for long enough for me. Only since 2016 he made his Premier League debut and wasn't even a regular in his first season, so I discounted him. Kyle Walker was probably the only other one I thought of out of them, but I thought Azpilicueta just got it over Kyle Walker just because he's good going forward and defensively as well, whereas Walker had a bit of a dodgy patch going backwards at the start of his career. He's got a lot better now, but he was a lot better going forward than he was going back. And then the only other rogue name that I even considered was Pablo Zabaleta, but we've seen how he ended his career at West Ham, so maybe that discounts him just for that.
Well, what about you?
I almost wholeheartedly agree. I do think that Kyle Walker deserves a bit more of a mention.
Who's your pick, Will? Who's your pick?
Azpilicueta.
It's Azpilicueta as well, okay.
Yeah. The only reason why I would argue more vociferously for Kyle Walker is because if you look at him and... Man City system, I think he's at the very, very forefront of backs being an integral part of pretty much one of the most transformational systems that the Premier League has ever seen, and he's sort of given rise to a lot of the creativity that we now see in modern right backs. I think if purely for being at the forefront of that, I think we do have to give him a bit more of a honourable mention, if not quite put him into the team.
Well, he's in the team because he's already got three votes, so what I say doesn't really matter. Out of interest, he was second on my list. Third was Kyle Walker.
Okay.
But first for me was Trent. I think his redevelopment of the position, you'll see a theme with how I pick these players. It's not just how good they are, but how they come to redefine the role in the years to come. I think it's probably too early to say how influential Trent will be on the right back position or the full back position in general. But he has the elite like pace and stamina that Walker has. He has the defensive nous almost as much as Azpilicueta does, probably not to the same level, but he has got that playmaking ability that's just completely transforms that Liverpool side into having so many dimensions of attack that he just goes in my team. I didn't really have to think about this too much. I just put him in and I thought I wouldn't have too much competition for that, but yeah.
Your argument is totally fair, and I think what we're seeing with Trent Alexander-Arnold now is there's a fair argument to see that we're watching the right back of the next 10 years and the next decade. Obviously, it's just obviously far too early into his career at the moment. He is, you could even argue he's the best right back in the league now, but if you're looking for the whole 10 years, it's a tough argument.
Yeah. I was considering at the end of this, just briefly having a quick brainstorm about the players we thought would be in the team of the next decade that we've seen already. But this is going to be a long one anyway.
Well, he'd be nailed on, I think.
Yeah. We can agree he'd be in there.
Yeah.
Right, centre back. I'll go first because I think I've got the shortest argument for. I'll do both of them just so for brevity. Van Dijk and company. There's essentially no arguing it. They're the two best centre-backs in the Premier League this decade, and they both led their teams to titles. Van Dijk with his leadership, but I've never seen a defender control a game like he does and just shut down elite players so easily. And then Kompany for primarily his leadership skills, but also just undeniably having the clutch gene. Like so many of these title wins, Kompany has headed a goal from a corner in a 1-0 or a 2-1 victory.
Or banged it in the top corner, yeah.
or just used Harry Maguire's enormous head to bend the ball around. For me, there's no arguing that, but I'm interested to hear what you guys say.
I've got a bit of a rogue shout. I don't know whether you would slip him in front of Kompany or Van Dijk, but I've gone for Toby Alderweireld as one of the options.
As a Spurs fan, no, I wouldn't. Chris, go on, Will.
Just because I think that if you're looking for a player in the Premier League that's encapsulated the ball playing centre back the most, which is the vogue state of the position, I think you would have to go for Toby Alderweireld. Contributes 9 accurate long balls a game. 57 clean sheets in 169 appearances, which isn't bad. He's got a tackle success rate in the 70s, which is right alongside Vincent Kompany and Virgil van Dijk, people who we think of as being rock solid at the back. His tackle success rate is up there with those two that you've mentioned. So that's why I would probably put him in the conversation at least, if not actually in the team.
Who was your other centre back?
I had a split between Vincent Kompany and Virgil van Dijk as well.
No, mate, you've got to pick one. You've got to have all three.
I would go for Vincent Kompany.
Kompany, okay. So the counter argument I'd have from Alderweireld, as much as I like him, I love him as a Spurs player and how good he is at his distribution, I'd say Van Dijk matches him. And okay, fine. You could talk about semantics about when they came into the league, but they both essentially played for Southampton and showed they could play the ball really well and then got picked up by another team and were even better. Alderweireld's success, I think, although he's definitely a brilliant player, was built on the back of a really good partnership with his national teammate Jan Vertonghen. I think without Vertonghen, he's not the same player. Interesting about Vertonghen, we'll come back to him in a bit. And Van Dijk, your tackle percentages and stuff, while, you know, convincing, I think a lot of, if you watch Van Dijk, it's about the tackles he doesn't have to make because of the way he controls the space, which is why he goes ahead of me. I would love to put Toby in the team, but centre-back's not the position that I'm putting a Spurs player in. Chris?
I think that's a fair comment.
Yeah, so I was going to ask you, Timmy, I was going to say, would you actually have Alderweireld over Vertonghen out of the two? Who would you put in? Would you put Toby in ahead of Vertonghen if it was
Delay that question. Okay. I will have an answer, just not right.
Okay.
Not right now.
So my two, this is going to be nice and simple, were Kompany and Van Dijk. So that's going to be the two. But I thought John Terry had a shout and I also had Rio Ferdinand on my list, but maybe both of them were a bit the same. Well, similar to the argument that Will was making before for Petr Cech, that their best years weren't in this decade, they were in the decade before.
Well, I mean, John Terry did win three Premier Leagues this decade.
Yeah.
But I don't think he was the outstanding contributor to these things, to any of those titles. I really do that Van Dijk and company were.
No, look, I think technical ability between the two centre-backs, there's no question that Van Dijk and company are the two best centre-backs that we've seen in the last decade. But like, I'm not a John Terry fan. He's obviously had his history with people in the past, but he is arguably the best English defender we've ever seen in our lifetime. And he led a Chelsea defence that was the most difficult defence we have ever seen play football. I mean, I know they had other defenders that were with them at that time that made them so solid, and Jose Mourinho, who has a history of being known as parking the bus, but he was a winner, and he was a winner throughout his career, and he still won up until when he retired. And I just think it's very difficult to cut someone out that, okay, I know what you're saying, his best years were in the last decade, sure, but he won three Premier Leagues, two FA Cups, and a Champions League, and a League Cup in the last 10 years. That's difficult, whilst Van Dijk has... I know Van Dijk has won the Champions League and now Premier League, and I know he's only been there recently, and that's an argument for him in that sense, that in the next few years...
Chris is literally dying to speak. Let's let him do it.
Yeah.
So the person I was talking about mostly for being better in the past decade was Ferdinand rather than Terry, only because Ferdinand played 4 years rather than... Terry played 7 years of this decade, so I understand that completely, Simo, and I see all of your argument. But similar to you, I don't want someone with the kind of off-field persona of Terry in my team.
That's fair enough.
That was something I had against him. I couldn't put him in my team for that. But the other thing I wanted to say was I also had the Premier League Player of the Season award for the two players we have picked. So Kompany was 2011-12 Premier League Player of the Season, Van Dijk 2018-19 Premier League Player of the Season, and the only other centre half on the list that's done it this decade is Nemanja Vidic, who also had a
great shout,
but he, like Ferdinand, he was probably better in the decade before and just overlapped into this decade. But I put a lot of weight, like Tim said before, those individuals won that Premier League Player of the Season award because they were outstanding individually for their team and won so much for their team. So I just pipped that just ahead of Terry.
Well, I mean, didn't Van Dijk finish third in the Ballon d'Or?
Yeah, exactly.
You only need to point to that to realise just how good of a player he is.
So are we agreed then it is Van Dijk and company with, like, granted there are differences in our opinion here, but I think on the whole we're agreeing that these guys deserve to be in.
Okay. Yeah,
totally.
Okay. Right, left back.
Can I just say this is the hardest position out of all of them?
Yeah.
It's hard,
it is. It is. So I haven't actually picked a left back from my left back spot. Looking up a couple of other teams of the decades that I've browsed, someone put Gareth Bale, which is a complete heinous joke. Like, yeah, but no.
I think they just wanted him in the team.
Yeah.
I think that was the only way he could put him in.
So I have actually put Jan Vertonghen here because he does play left back. He does. I promise he does. So yeah, his partnership with Toby Alderweireld turned Spurs into one of the best defensive sides in the middle of the decade. And again, Van Dijk, brilliant passer of the ball. Kompany, outstanding defensively. Why I thought Jan Vertonghen could fit in at left back was because he was the first sort of marauding centre back that we've seen to grace the shores. Again, him and Hugo Lloris both rocked up at the same time. He was playing left back at the time. And he was just bombing down the wing and sort of underlapping centrally. You're just like, what the hell is this? I thought this was a centre-back we were buying from Ajax. I think he got 8 goals or something like that in the Premier League in his first season, Jan Vertonghen. And he also tore Man United to shreds. I distinctly remember William. If only I could amalgamate Alderweireld and Vertonghen into one man. So I kind of just have. Sorry, Toby. But yeah, Vertonghen is my left-back. For lack of better options than anything else. Jack.
Yeah, as I said, obviously, I think this is probably one of the more difficult positions to choose someone in the last 10 years, because last decade, I think it was pretty obvious that it was only going to be Ashley Cole, but now It's more difficult. Some names that came up for me were Leighton Baines, obviously. I think he's an absolutely brilliant player for Everton. Obviously, he didn't really win much, but he did offer something new, which Trent Alexander probably does now in the fact that he offers set piece and he could cross. And he did bring goals, but unfortunately he wasn't my choice. My choice did come out as Patrice Evra. And yes, I know, obviously, again, the first few years that he was at Manchester United were the best few years of his career, which were last decade. However, he's a winner, and he won two Premier Leagues in the last decade. And yes, he had some off-field antics and issues outside of football, but you always knew what you were getting with Patrice Evra. And I think sometimes you need that sort of player in your team. It doesn't hurt having someone that's going to have your back all the way through a game.
I would agree with your assertion about both Leighton Baines and Patrice Evra. For me, Patrice Evra probably, again, as we've said before, as with Ashley Cole, probably had his best moments in the previous decade. So that would probably, even though, of course, he didn't win as much, but if you're looking for the epitome of really Mr. Consistency...
Are you going to go Aspilicueta again?
No, I'm not going to go. I'm not going to go Aspilicueta. Mr. Consistency in a side that, you know, didn't really challenge for the top four, had no illusions really of winning the Premier League. I think you probably have to go for Leighton Baines.
Okay, it's Leighton Baines then, I suppose.
Yeah, I chose Leighton Baines as well. Just to add to what Simo was saying before, the stats, the fifth most chances created of any player in the past decade with 506, which is the highest of any defender. The only people above him are Ozil, Eriksen, Hazard and Silva. That's a fairly mental stat that made me think he obviously played all 10 years of the past decade, which had him over Robertson, who combined between his time at Hull, which he wasn't known obviously for, and then his time at Liverpool, he only managed to play 5 years out of the whole decade. So a bit like Trent, it's probably going to be his next decade that he's going to be good in rather than this decade. So yeah, I had Leighton, Patrice Evra, as been mentioned, and Robertson on my list. And then the final rogue one, which again is going to be like Trent for next season, it's going to be the battle between Robertson and Ben Chilwell for next decade to see who's going to be the best left back. But I thought he deserved a mention because he's been fairly good since 20.
So Robertson's 25 or something like that, isn't he?
Yeah, 25.
Yeah. Huh, okay, cool. It's Baines. Baines has gone in. I can't deny that Everton side that was so exciting under Moyes, with Fellaini and Baines and Coleman really at the crux of everything they did. They were a really good team, and Baines was excellent, and he could easily have moved to United and become the best left back in the league, in one of the best teams in the league, or Chelsea or whoever. So I think it's a worthy addition. I just don't think he's done anything for 4 years. I haven't really thought about him for 4 years. And I think the chances created thing that you've just mentioned is the fact it probably stems entirely from the fact he probably took all of Everton's set pieces for about five of those 10 years before someone else came in. Well, I'm not taking away from him. It's excellent for a left back, but still.
Can we make an argument for Alonso as well, just in the sense that, and I'm obviously not saying he's the best in the decade, but he again on attacking prowess offered up so much more than we've seen in a long time as well.
I think it's fair, but he only works in one system, and that's with three at the back, so no.
Honourable mention, and that's it.
Yeah.
All I was looking for.
For anyone who didn't realise, this is obviously a 4-3-3.
Yes.
So, right, how have you done your midfield out of interest? Like, have you gone for a defensive midfielder and two more attacking ones, like 2-8s? Yeah.
No.
What have you done, Jack?
Well, no, I've just got three central midfielders. I mean, I know we all know you're going to have N'Golo Kanté in there.
So, I've gone for Jan Vertonghen. Jack, who have you gone for? Pick your most defensive one.
Oh, God.
Most defensive.
David Silva.
David Silva. Mate, we were quite clear when we were...
No, I'd have held two at the back and one further forward, but they wouldn't have been very further back. They would just be more central midfielders. That's what they would have been. Yeah. But I think David Silva is the most obvious player that we're going to be putting in the midfield that we've had in the last decade. All three of you guys are going to have David Silva in there. And if you haven't, I'm going to be very upset.
Have we all put David Silva in our team?
Yes.
We've all put him in, so he's in the team. It's just, he's in the team. Goes.
Yes.
okay. All right. I don't think we need to hear any more about him. Who are your other midfielders, Jack?
Kevin De Bruyne.
Yep.
And the other one is my very left field, but he is the most technically gifted centre mid that we've seen in Santi Cazorla.
Yeah.
Oh god, Jack.
All right, Jack, thanks for your input.
That's all right. I knew this was going to be an issue with everyone else, but he is the technically most gifted centre mid we've had in the last decade.
Chris spares blushes.
I agreed on two of those, but obviously didn't agree on Santi Cazorla. I had David Silva just in passing, just so that he gets a bit of a mention. Most assists in the decade, 89. Most chances created. And the most passes, but that doesn't really mean anything. So yeah, he's definitely in there. Kevin De Bruyne was my other one, third most assists in the decade, even though he's only played 6 years out of the decade, which is fairly nuts. And he's obviously been so good over that time since going to City. The time at Chelsea, obviously not so good. But the third one, controversial one, is Jordan Henderson. I'm going to have a few Liverpool fans. I noticed on the BBC Sport website, one, they had Steven Gerrard, which I couldn't quite understand. Like a lot of the people that we've mentioned previously, all of his best play was in the decade before and not in his best form once he'd come into this decade, so it wasn't going to be him. The other people I looked at were Frank Lampard, but again, similarly, probably his best work was in the previous decade. Had James Milner on there, Mr. Consistency. I had Yaya Toure, because we remember quite how good he was in the early part of the decade, because whenever you do one of these teams, it's quite easy to remember all of the players recently, but maybe not so the players before that. I had N'Golo Kante there with a shout as well. You're going to enjoy this, Tim. I had Gareth Bale on there, but not because he didn't play long enough.
In centre mid?
Also didn't play centre mid, but...
Yeah, well, you can have him anywhere, really. like you can have Coutinho in there as well, but I didn't think he was really worth it. Yeah. So my argument for Jordan Henderson is he played the most games of any player in the past decade. And I would say that he's probably the most improved player over the course of the whole decade, culminating, obviously, in the title win. Yeah. But he's a consistent performer week in, week out. And he's there before being Mr. Consistency, and you could play him anywhere across that midfield, and in a more attacking position or in your defensive midfield, and he'd fit in quite happily and make your team tick, really.
Okay, well,
I agree with David De Silva and Kevin De Bruyne. David Silva and Kevin De Bruyne.
Yeah.
Just a couple of stats. Kevin De Bruyne is by far and away leads all kind of centre midfields in terms of big chances created per game, with an quite astonishing 0.6, which is far and away the best that the Premier League realistically can offer in that position for this decade. Close behind him is David Silva with 0.4. So I think that those two are my creative fulcrum, and then I don't think you can pick anybody apart from N'Golo Kante. 5.8 tackles and interceptions per game, which is just sort of outlandish. Yeah. I mean, it's crazy how much defensive work he gets through, and that, with N'Golo Kante in the game, in the team, it gives sort of everybody else a license to pretty much do whatever they want going forward, knowing that Kante is going to be there to snuff out any kind of attack that the other team is going to put towards you.
I would make an argument, though, if you're going to set N'Golo Kante in that respect, then you can make an argument about Fernandinho, because he did it earlier in the decade and he's still doing it now, and he can fit in at the back. Don't get me wrong, I don't think he's as good as N'Golo Kante did it.
Yeah. Leicester's title win doesn't happen with Fernandinho, it did with Kante, just for the dynamism. They are different players in terms of how much ground they can cover, and Kante was like two players. Fernandinho is excellent, but I don't think he's on the same stratosphere as Kante was. I'm not convinced he's at that level now. Kante was in my team. The other was where I didn't have Silva as a midfielder. I had him as an attacking midfielder, so he is in the team, and I had De Bruyne. But my other midfielder was Yaya Toure. I think that in terms of carrying that early Man City team, I think Toure did so much, and he was kind of I don't want to say he's probably retrospectively slightly undervalued. He was unbelievable, like a complete physical force of nature, as well as being technically brilliant. Touré was one of those players that just made you always stand up on your feet, live wire, all this kind of thing. I'd easily have had him in my team in the decade. I honestly didn't even consider it a question that he wouldn't get in this, and none of you put it in.
Well, I've got a couple of other outside shouts. Not that I imagine that they would be in there, but I've got a couple of other midfielders that I've looked at.
Yeah.
So the first one is Cesc Fabregas.
Yeah, I could have made an argument as well for Cesc.
He lags just behind David Silva with 0.35 big chances per game. And then 0.5 goal contributions to game, which is also underlooked, I think. And then
who's the other rogue one?
I think the other one, not to embarrass myself too much, but I think you might have to, not that he would be in the team, but I think Paul Pogba is
no, not a chance,
no
not
way.
A chance. Okay. Doesn't even get near the team, mate.
Who do you take in these two, Moussa Dembélé or Paul Pogba?
Technically, Moussa Dembélé, 100%. Moussa Dembélé
every day.
He was your most technically gifted midfielder. Yeah. Obviously, his issues was his injuries. I could have said the same argument about Abu Diaby, but obviously he had the same issue where he just couldn't stay fit. Yeah. When those guys were fitter on the pitch, they were unbelievable. That was their issue. Pogba, I'm sorry, great footballer, doesn't do it for me. Doesn't even get near the team.
Not in the Premier League. If you're taking the Premier League into account, he was brilliant.
I'd rather take Jordan Henderson. Yeah.
I probably would as well. Sorry, Will, that's an awful answer.
Okay, right,
front three. We'll start with, did you actually give these guys propositions? I've already put Silva in, so I've forgotten about that.
So I'm surprised you're going to be missing someone that I thought the front three was the most obvious front three you could actually have.
Yeah, I've not put Bale in there if you think that's obvious.
No, I'm not thinking Bale.
Right, who have you got, Jack?
So the most obvious for the decade is Eden Hazard.
Yeah.
On one wing. I don't really need to make an argument. The guy was by far the best player in Chelsea's team for the whole last 10 years. Goals, assists, winning anything and everything. He basically carried that team. He also tracked back. He defended well for Chelsea. A striker is Sergio Aguero. Sergio Aguero is the best striker in the last decade. He's always going to be in the argument with being the best Premier League striker we've ever seen. It just depends on when he leaves and obviously how we see it after he's left. But my third one is Mohamed Salah. Mohamed Salah is pretty much the reason why Liverpool have kicked on now attackingly. I know having players like Virgil van Dijk and Sadio Mane really helped that team go on and win the league, but
you
Salah
know
was
you're
the first
in trouble
one.
When the Liverpool fan is shaking his head.
but Salah is, other than, okay, I'd say your most important player now is Virgil van Dijk, because I think you can replace Salah easier than Virgil van Dijk, but Salah is a winner and he turns up in the big games.
Chris?
So on Salah, I didn't have Salah in there, one because he's done it over a shorter amount of time than some of the others, but also personally I'd have Sadio Mane in ahead of Salah. Mane tracks back a lot more than Salah does defensively, and he was also turned into a better, well, Salah had one amazing season at the start, but Mane's been more consistently good over a longer period of time. He was pretty good at Southampton before, but got better and better as the whole decade's gone on. So if it was going to be any of that Liverpool front three, then it would be Mane. But also I think you take Salah out of that front three and I think it could still work fairly well. But Firmino and Mane are more important to that front three than Salah is. So that's why I didn't have him in there. But agreed on Sergio Aguero. I think he was the most obvious person to have in the whole team out of everyone we've done. Hazard, yes, 100% agree. Most successful dribbles in the decade, second most chances created, and was obviously the 2014-15 player of the season. He was an obvious one. And my third one was Raheem Sterling. I think Raheem's improved a hell of a lot over the whole time. And it surprised even me, obviously, as a Liverpool fan, but he started playing in 2012. Mm-hmm. And was obviously not as good as he is now. He's improved a hell of a lot over the whole time, but he definitely made a massive difference in that Brendan Rodgers team when we had Suarez and Sturridge. A lot that was the SAS attack, and it was him helping out a lot those other guys. So for me, I think he's he's someone that should definitely be in that team.
The problem with Sterling is a little bit similar to Salah. I think if you take him out of the City team that was brilliant, like they did frequently, they still function as well. It's an interesting argument, Sterling, considering he's been around for so long and how good he was when he came onto the scene. I'll have to think about that a bit more. Will?
I've gone for the same as the other two in terms of Eden Hazard and Sergio Aguero. I've got two other strikers that we can possibly look at, unless you just want to agree that Sergio Aguero is nailed on. I've gone for Harry Kane up top as somebody who's worth a shout, who only just lags behind Sergio Aguero in terms of goals per game ratio. Is 0.1 in it.
Yeah, well, Kane's just got to 200 appearances and he's on 137 goals. At the same point, Aguero was on 138.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
There's very minimal in it. And in the same way as goal contributions per game, it's only a 0.1 worth of a difference.
Yeah. Who's your other one, Will?
The other striker that I had a look at was Luis Suarez. And I can appreciate the argument that he didn't play enough in the Premier League. I think he probably had got the highest ceiling of the strikers in terms of an individual match performance. If you're looking for an individual match performance out of one particular striker, I think you would probably go for Luis Suarez. Just because the season that he had with Liverpool, his glorious season. Nobody, I think he was sort of, you can't really describe him as a footballer. He's sort of an alien. Sort of most looked like what you would imagine Messi would look like in the Premier League. So that would be my other shout for strikers of the decade. And just like Jack, I have gone for Mohamed Salah on the right wing, because I think while I take your point about Raheem Sterling, I think Mo Salah and Raheem Sterling fulfil the same role for their teams, and I think that Mo Salah does it better.
I agree.
That's pretty much my argument. I understand that Raheem has come on leaps and bounds since he first started in the Premier League, but if you're looking at shooting percentages, Mo Salah is highest. If you're looking at goal contributions per game, Mo Salah is at 0.87 goal contributions per game, way ahead of Sterling. If you're looking at big chances created per game as well, Mo Salah is on 0.4, which again is ahead of Raheem Sterling. So that's why I would put him ahead of Sterling, in my opinion.
And Salah over Mane.
I think that while I appreciate that Mane has come on leaps and bounds, I don't think that he's the most integral part of that front three. I think Salah is still the most integral part of that front three.
I think that what you're looking at it
in terms of comparing Salah to the outlandish season that he had, whereas if you look at his goal contributions, they're still the highest in Liverpool Football Club. They're still over Firmino and Mane, despite how much they've progressed, which is a lot. I think you would have a harder time replacing Salah than you would have replacing Mane.
Depends if you play football just to score goals or if you're looking for an all-round player, because there's no doubt Salah's a fantastic goal scorer, doesn't track back as much as Mane, doesn't do the defensive work that Firmino does, and Firmino does a hell of a lot of link work that's actually vital to that front three.
I think that comes with the caveat of who then you have in midfield, don't you? So I think if you pick Jordan Henderson in midfield, then absolutely you have a bigger shout of picking Mane in terms of his defensive capabilities. But if you pick N'Golo Kante,
oh no, now that's complete rubbish, because Henderson covers so much ground. He covers nearly as much as Kante. I admit Kante covers a tiny bit more, but Hendo is a fucking workhorse.
Right, we'll end that, Will. I think Salah has made it into the team. alongside Hazard and Aguero. I'm just going to throw in my vote for Harry Kane, like I said a couple of seconds ago. I think he has been somewhat shafted by the fact that he emerged in the middle of the decade rather than coming at the start like Aguero did. Is it controversial to say that peak Harry Kane is better than peak Aguero? He would go in more teams. I think he would fit into more elite teams than Aguero would.
Aguero only gets in there because of his whole stats over the whole decade,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Also, if you play two up top, then Harry Kane definitely
gets
in.
Harry Kane gets in. So I love Harry Kane. Just for who he is as a human, this is why Suarez never even got close to this. Like, racist and bit Ivanovic, as well as several other people. Like, I'm not having him in this.
It's like the John Terry argument.
Yeah. Well, John Terry, I don't know. I'm sort of mixed about John Terry. I think he did some bad things, but we all do not great things. And, you know, it's bad. It's hard enough being a footballer. But anyway, Harry Kane is just a lovely bloke. Like, everything he does, he's sponsoring Leyton Orient next season because they are out of cash. And what he's done is put a children's charity, the NHS, and all this kind of stuff on it. That's just a great guy. That's who you want as your England captain. Granted, England captaincy, not part of it. The way he burst onto the scene as a 21-year-old, which is pretty late, and essentially took the league by storm and was phenomenal for three seasons before having his ankle injury, and he's still putting up the numbers despite the fact that he's clearly not physically the same player he was.
What I would add to that is that was it three straight 30 goals per season for Harry Kane? And correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe Sergio Aguero has only done it once in 10 years. And granted, that has been hampered by injury.
Yeah,
but if you're looking for sort of just an out-and-out goal scorer, then a reasonable shout has to be made for Harry Kane.
But Kane isn't just an out-and-out goal scorer. Have you seen him for England creatively? As I know England isn't part of the argument, but like his vision, his passing is just outstanding. And the way he calmly leads a team. I think if you put Kane in that City team, they do better. I really do. Kane is phenomenal. Aguero is brilliant in a team backed by a state, a sovereign state. Kane is just a fantastic player and would slot into any team. I'm not saying Aguero is bad. God, please don't think that. Like, this is like comparing tiny little things, but I just do think Kane is a better player. And I'm more than happy to have Aguero in there because he does belong in the team. And I would put him in with Kane if Kane was like somehow a left winger, but he's not. Honourable mention to Gareth Bale. That 2011-12 season was his season. And realistically, if he was in any of these iterations of the Spurs teams, he would have carried them to the title. He was just the difference maker back then. But anyway, we've got Cech, Azpilicueta, Van Dijk, Kompany, Leighton Baines, Kante, Kevin De Bruyne, Silva, Hazard, Salah and Aguero. I really don't like that Salah. I think that ruins the whole thing because it's just wrong on many, many levels. But he's in there because of popular demand. We know the people speaking is very much how the world works, all the 52%. That's our team. Write in and disagree with us because it's not right entirely.
That's fair.
Who have we missed? Have we missed anyone sort of golden from this decade? Probably not, but you know.
We didn't speak at all about Wayne Rooney.
Yeah, that's true. His third most goals in the decade.
I do think there have been better strikers than him for most of this decade. I think Rooney is a legend, granted. I just think there have been better strikers throughout the whole decade than Rooney. He's probably second and third if you're taking any individual time point, but he's never been first for more than a season.
Yeah, agreed.
Just to recap for you, Jack, it's Cech, Azpilicueta, Van Dijk, Kompany, Baines, Kante, Kevin De Bruyne, Silva, Hazard, Salah and Aguero. Well, my nomination for sub on the bench and most effective signing of the decade, probably, is Roberto Soldado in forcing us to go with Harry Kane because he was so bad.
who's our captain? I think there's only one obvious choice.
Kompany, for me.
Kompany, yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Kompany.
There you go. Easy. Jack and
Kompany.
Yeah,
Kompany.
Thought it was quite easy.
Cool.
I agree.
I mean, if you want to move on to who you think might be
right,
in the team.
I think
the
we just elect a player we're most excited about for the next decade. Just one. Will.
I'm going to go for Trent Alexander-Arnold.
Trent, Chris.
Yeah, easy Trent.
For me, it's Phil Foden. I think the heir apparent is Davin Silva, and I'm so excited to see what he can do, because under Pep he will be brilliant, and whoever comes afterwards will have a gem of a player to work with. He's already looks really good. And I think we're going to win the World Cup and the Euros and the Universal Cup of Football whenever that happens, you know, when we take on, you know, some other galaxy. Assuming that happens in the next 10 years, because I think this England team is outrageous. Anyway, that's it for the Dugout Debate podcast. I assume you're going to disagree with pretty much everything that we said. Kante is questionable. Now I'm thinking about it more, but he's in the team. Get in touch with us at @dugout_debate on all the social media channels, and we look forward to seeing you soon. Thanks, chaps.
Cheers.